From inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer! And somehow it's answered.
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman talking Syracuse basketball as they go down the stretch. They were on that NCAA tournament bubble. Not so sure anymore. They've definitely faded out of a lot of these conversations and are on the outside looking outside at this point with the way things have gone. They've got a lot of work to do to be able to bolster that resume after a pretty disappointing loss to Duke. Obviously, Duke up and coming right now. They've looked great over the last couple of weeks, but they've definitely, that was a must win, as close to a must win as can be. Obviously, there's still a route to recovery, but that game you're going to want back. That will be the game that's circled regardless of whether or not they make the tournament. And it leaves a lot on the table for Syracuse and is asking a lot of them to be able to bring this resume back up to tournament ready. We say hello on multiple platforms now. YouTube, we are visually in front of you, podcasting, wherever you're getting your podcasts. We thank you for listening or viewing whichever way you go about that. As always, follow us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. We've got our predictions, which I have ran completely away with at this point. I think it might be too late for Ben to come back unless he starts pulling some 3-0 sweeps, which is not out of the question, but it would be an all-time botch on my part to blow this lead at this point. But who knows? You can follow us over there. We've got numbers, more content throughout the week, and our thoughts during the game, following the game. So just something to keep on the mindset. If you're with us on YouTube, please like the video, subscribe if you have not yet. We would love to see these videos continue to grow. And if you're listening to us on any of these podcast platforms, a subscription, a review, a rating, they all go a very, very long way. Ben, 85-71 Syracuse against Duke, but that score is even a little bit deceiving as Buddy hit a couple of threes down the stretch. This was pretty much a 20-point loss from the start, and Syracuse, they didn't show much, and it really, really has saddened and dampened this tournament resume that was already icking and grasping for straws to begin with.
Yeah, it was a horrible, horrible start. And we talked about it after the Notre Dame game, that just because you come back on the Irish doesn't mean you can come back on everyone. Syracuse out of the gate down 34-14. Even on your best day, if you put your best 30 minutes together, 20-point swing is a big thing to ask. This Duke team managed the lead well, and SU really just couldn't hit shots on a consistent basis and definitely couldn't defend. The inside play, the numbers actually don't look horrible. If you go to the box score, Syracuse won the offensive rebounding battle, but one guy for Duke, Mark Williams, who really, you know, we talked to David Shumate, and he did say Mark Williams could have a big game. So all credit to David there. And he did. He had a game that really he's never had before. First time that Williams has even 10 rebounds in a game. First time that he double-doubles, and it's 17-11. And Syracuse just couldn't get stops because Williams kept grabbing those offensive boards when Duke needed it and converting it into second-chance points.
I'm not so sure, Ben. I think he said that Syracuse doesn't have to worry about him on the offensive side. I think he said he could have a big defensive game, but the fact that David Shoemate says that Mark Williams is not someone to worry about on the offensive side of the ball. And he goes out and has career highs in points and rebounds. And he looked like he was on, I don't know, the same level as like Jay Huff at this point. And some of those bigs over at UNC, Syracuse made him look as good as any big in this conference. And I mean, no disrespect to Mark Williams. He played a phenomenal game. He's not that good. And they made him look heavenly. They made him look like he was the gift of basketball. And it just goes to show, obviously, someone that can be an impact player on the defensive side. But when you take a guy that someone who knows this team as good as anyone in the media is going to say, and you don't have to worry about him on the offensive side, it just goes to show the flaws that Syracuse has had in the zone, the inability to step up and to play a solid defensive game in a lot of these big situations. For whatever reason, Syracuse can't lose a close ACC game. They get blown out pretty much every time they lose. And when you sort of look at the numbers for Syracuse, their last four losses, you lose by 14 to Duke. Obviously, that Clemson game is a 17-point loss, but that was a disaster from the start. You lose by 23 to Virginia, and then 20 points, to Pittsburgh. Like, you're getting blown out time and time again in ACC play. That is not a good sign. And a stat I heard today over on ESPN Radio, Syracuse has only beaten one team at this point that's going to be in the NCAA tournament, it looks like. Virginia Tech. I don't think they've beaten another team that's going to make the tournament at this point, which is awful. When you're getting into this stretch where you're trying to put as many wins, you've got one quad one opportunity left that we're going to preview in a second, really. You've got two fringe quad one opportunities, but we're talking about it and you think about it. I mean, even if they are a quad one opportunity when Syracuse plays them, if Syracuse wins, they're no longer going to be quad ones. So you've got all of these sort of games where you've had tournament caliber teams and you haven't performed. And maybe Bryant can etch their way into that conversation if they win a conference tournament. But you're not playing well against teams that you're supposed to be being compared to when it comes down to these at-large bids on Selection Sunday. Syracuse has failed to complete the task this year time and time again. And when they failed to complete the task, they've done it in treacherous manners as well.
Yeah, who knows how the committee exactly decides it. But it would be one thing if there were a couple close losses. I mean, like the North Carolina loss was like a respectable loss. You look at the UVA loss, the Clemson loss, the Duke loss. I mean, this team has not been competitive with, no offense to a lot of the ACC, good basketball teams. They've been competitive with average basketball teams and below average basketball teams. But that's not how you get into the tournament. I think a lot of the times that Syracuse has been in this precarious bubble position later in the year, they've had a much better resume than they frankly do right now. You know, they're not on the so-called bubble that ESPN sets. And I don't really consider them on the bubble of what, you know, we all consider the bubble. I just think that, you know, barring some epic string of wins at the end of the season, and like, people are probably thinking Syracuse always pulls off an epic string of wins, like more than usual, like probably win out, win multiple games in the ACC tournament, even some that Syracuse probably shouldn't, maybe. But it's, you know, as we start talking about Georgia Tech, it's, we're asking Syracuse to win games here, and they haven't shown that they have any ability to do it whatsoever.
Yeah, when you look at those years where they sneak into the tournament, where they're right on the fringe and they're able to get in, they've got a couple of things going for them. First and foremost, they've been solid defensive teams, which I think goes a long way when it comes to doing this stuff. And they're not a solid defensive team this year. They're 94 in adjusted efficiency defensively per KenPom, but it's not really enough, to be honest. They're really not doing enough on the defensive side of the ball, and they've had a lot of flaws. They've been exposed time and time again. As Jim Boeheim says post game, you've got a starter who says at halftime that he didn't play defense. There have been a lot of defensive issues, especially early on in games, and it's been the Achilles heel, is that defensive side of the ball. The offense has done what it needs to do. I think the offense is right where it should be in terms of this team being able to succeed. The defense has been the fatal flaw. and they're going to have to figure it out because they've got three games left and all three are against quality opponents. You look at KenPom rankings right now, Georgia Tech at 33, Carolina 36, Clemson 37. Three upper echelon-esque teams in the ACC this year. And obviously you see Georgia Tech on the schedule and you don't think too much of it. But as you start to look at this Georgia Tech team outside of that first week spurt where they look terrible, which we'll get into in 1 second, this is a darn good basketball team. And to give you the details and to give you an even more convincing sort of sales pitch here, we caught up with Ken Segura of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He covers all things Georgia Tech, football, basketball, and, you know, just major storylines that revolve around Virginia Tech or Georgia Tech athletics, excuse me. And he's got a lot of good content. One of the smarter guys when it comes to getting this content, and a lot of good information out of him as always. We're now joined by Ken Segura. He is a writer for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, covers pretty much all things Georgia Tech, especially, you know, football, basketball. And we had him on in the fall talking some Georgia Tech football. So Ken, welcome back. We're happy to have you back here.
Thanks, guys. I'm glad to be on with you guys.
Now I saw, and I wanted to bring this up first. You said on Twitter you got to start getting out of the house a little more because you're starting to learn about Frozen 2 Easter eggs.
Yeah. So my son, he was homesick. He and his sisters like to kind of poke around on the internet while we're not watching. And they found, I guess, probably some YouTube video about Frozen 2 Easter eggs. And like, so first of all, you know, that he even knows what an Easter egg is. But then second, he's telling me that, like, yeah, Frozen 2, which he just watched, you know, there's all these Easter eggs in it. And I was like, yeah, that's, I don't know. We've got to get outside and do something besides watch videos and watch Netflix. Cause yeah, it's just not healthy.
Oh, that's awesome. And I feel like everyone's sort of in that same boat where you're trying to get out and do more, but obviously while treading lightly and proceeding with as much caution as we can to get into this Georgia Tech basketball season. Obviously, we're going to get to the more recent stuff, but I just want to open up with, I mean, you start the season and you lose in a quad overtime game to Georgia State.
Right.
And then you lose by double figures to Mercer. What happened in those two games?
Well, first be thankful that Josh Passer isn't answering this question because he'd give you like a 10-minute spiel about it. But basically, in the preseason, Josh Passer made the decision, the head coach at Georgia Tech, that because of, you know, if you get knocked out by COVID, you're not going to be out for 2 weeks. He was so kind of concerned about if we get one guy sick, that's going to make the whole team sick and we'll have to sideline ourselves. So what he did was, you know, they went to a very heavy non-contact practice style or you know way of going about things. They're just doing, you know, 5-on-0 and shooting drills and that sort of thing. They were doing no scrimmaging, no, you know, contact drills and that sort of thing. And so he was thinking, we've got a veteran team, hopefully this will work. And you know, against Georgia State, which is a, you know, pretty good team anyway, they didn't look like themselves. You know, they as you said, they lost in 4 overtimes. And then to the next game, on top of not being, you know, physically ready, now they've played, you know, what is it, 60 minutes of basketball. Their legs are gone. Mercer, you know, dialed up to play the in-state team. Tech probably a little fried mentally, and the results were where they were. They lost, you know, really badly. And so it was after that that, you know, Pastor made the decision, okay, you know, forget the consequence or potential consequences. We're going to go back to practicing contact, you know, and it had just the way the schedule fell, they were able to do a lot of 2-a-day sessions and for about a week. And they've got Kentucky coming in, or they played a neutral game there in Atlanta. And everyone's thinking, well, if you lose to Mercer and Georgia State, you know, what chance do you have against Kentucky? But they won, you know, kind of going away. And which, you know, it, looking back, it makes sense, but obviously it was kind of a crazy result. But, you know, from that point forward, they've obviously been pretty good. But it's interesting. Yeah, everyone's kind of wondering how the selection committee is going to look at those two games. Are they going to kind of understand the context, or are they going to care? But yeah, it's obviously two really strange results in the course of the season.
Before we get deep into the roster and schedule, Passner himself is quite the story for this Georgia Tech team. I think I saw a Bleacher Report article that had like, was this quote said by Michael Scott of The Office or John Passner? And it's going back and forth. You know, what kind of guy has he been to interact with, even though obviously a lot has been virtual, I assume? Right. What kind of character is he?
He's a super enthusiastic, very positive-minded person. He repeats himself all the time. That's kind of, I mean, it's funny. Michael Scott, I mean, he's, I like to think he's a little smarter than Michael Scott, but yeah, he's kind of, maybe you've got that maybe sort of naivete about him, and obviously you look at the results, the way the season's gone, he's done a good job with this team, but very accessible. Energy and positivity may be the things that define him the most. I'll give you, this is maybe the best example, but, I guess you probably guys see him on the ACC teleconference. And the way it usually works is if you have a game on Monday, later that day, you don't have to do the teleconference. And I'm going to guess every coach that has ever played on a Monday has taken that option. But, you know, the week before they were playing on a Monday, I think it was against Louisville, so this is actually an afternoon game for that matter. He's like, no, I'll be back here. I love doing this. And I want to help you guys, whatever it was. And so he comes back on, probably 3 hours or, yeah, probably 3 or 4 hours before game time, and he's talking and answering questions. But he's entertaining, and yeah, he's a character for sure.
So speaking, we'll sort of just stay on the passer line here. Mm-hmm. When you look at, I believe it's his last four seasons, they have not been in the top 230 in terms of KenPom steal or turnover percentage, mm-hmm. and now suddenly this year they're taking care of the ball at some of the best rates in the country.
Right.
What have you sort of seen? Is it just that experience that's speaking for it, or have you seen sort of just some bigger changes within the program?
I think that's a lot of it. It's a senior dominated team. The point guard is Jose Alvarado, who's actually from Brooklyn. Not that that's super close to Syracuse, but at least it's in the state. So he started from the time he was a freshman, and he took his lumps, a lot of, 3-4 turnover games. And now you look at him and, it's usually 1 or 2 or 0. You've got great handles. And the same goes with other guys on the roster. Michael DeBoe is a junior, started from the time he was a freshman. Bubba Parham, he's a senior. Jordan Usher, also a senior, all in the starting lineup. And Moses Wright, for that matter, also a senior. So, yeah, it's a lot that of just, getting better at taking care of the ball. And, one thing that go back to Pastner, he preaches, every possession is precious. Hate that I'm repeating him. So that, I think that's probably sunk in a little more. And probably some of it maybe too is schematic of a lot of dribble drive and going to the basket. And maybe if you're, if you're understanding where each other, everyone is and that sort of thing, you're probably more apt to hold on to the ball.
Another kind of major number that stands out for this team is one that stands out for Syracuse too. It's the offensive rebounding percentage going both ways. The Jackets don't especially dominate the offensive boards, and they have struggled at times protecting theirs. But you could say the same thing about the Orange. What do you think about that kind of matchup going together of two teams that maybe aren't the strongest inside?
That's interesting. I think certainly some of it has to do with both teams playing, certainly Syracuse and Tech, just to a degree also. They both play a lot of zone, and which makes it harder. If you're on defense, you're going to be more apt to give up offensive rebounds. Tech, because they're a smaller lineup, typically they have one big Moses Wright typically on the floor. And so I think just to protect against transition, they're often bringing four back after a shot goes up to protect against transition. So they don't see that as their, the way to increase efficiency. And so it's interesting. It's a kind of a give and take, defensively, for instance. They used to be really good when they had really good shot blockers at block percentage and so forth, but now that's way down, but their steals are way up because, they're quicker and they more guard oriented. And so the same thing, I think, with offense, their turnovers are down, but at the same time, the rebounding, offensive rebounding percentage is down. So, you're still getting, hopefully, a similar number of possessions or maybe more so, but just a different way of doing it.
To sort of start looking in at some of the specific players, I think the big name for me, and it has been just nightmare fuel for Syracuse this year against opposing bigs. What is sort of the play style with Moses Wright? What do you see out of him? because it's, I mean, in terms of utter height, it seems like a beneficial matchup for Syracuse, but what he lacks in height, he makes up for in play style from what I've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he plays a lot or a good bit out of the high post when they run their Princeton stuff. He plays at the elbow and they kind of play off of him. So he's a good, pretty good ball handler. You know, decent range, can go out to three. But yeah, athletic, you know, explosive to the basket, and a good motor too. So he's going to, you know, he's going to work and grind to get rebounds there. So, I don't know if you remember, but actually last year against Syracuse, he had probably his best game. I think he was 30 or more points and, you know, probably 10, 12 rebounds, something like that. So, obviously I'm sure Jim Boeheim and those guys remember, but yeah, he's been a problem for a lot of teams for sure.
The benefit of the high post there.
Right. Yeah. I obviously against, you know, the 2-3, I think a lot of teams try to get the ball, you know, kind of where that logo is and kind of, you know, make fine cutters or whatever it is. So yeah, I'm sure that's something that Georgia Tech will be trying to do.
If there is one, what's kind of the fatal flaw for Wright?
For Wright? Let's see. Well, I mean, you know, certainly he plays a lot of minutes. And so he's had some issue with foul trouble, not a lot. But I think, you know, probably, boy, I mean, I think maybe it's tight. I mean, you know, if he gets back down in the low post, you know, maybe that's more of a mismatch problem. You know, I'm not going to say he's without flaw by any means, but when I think about him, I don't know that there's one thing that like, oh, he probably can't do that. I should know better, but I don't think of him as the best free throw shooter, but yeah, so yeah, maybe, you know, kind of taking advantage of his height. And I got a little too, I think too, he plays a lot of minutes. And so they've been better about monitoring that. But yeah, I think certainly, you know, if he's on the floor for, you know, 35 plus minutes as has happened this season, then certainly then in the games rather than a half, you know, he's probably a little more susceptible to you know, not being able to make it back or run on the floor as well as he can.
You look at, I'm going to say, the other two-thirds of the big three, not to just cut Jordan Usher out of there because he's played very well this season as well, but you look at the three guys that combined for 47, almost 48 points a game. When you look at Jose Alvarado and Michael DeVoe, what do they add in the backcourt, and what have you seen? I mean, we've seen them more than enough here in Central New York. Are there any big changes you've seen to their game this year that we should be on the lookout for?
With Jose, I think, you know, the turnovers is part of it. I think they were, and actually the one thing that maybe I'd say is not the one thing, but he's gotten a lot better just going to the basket and scoring, you know, just on layups, using his body to protect, you know, himself and, you know, the ball from defenders, picking his spots, you know, giving it up if he thinks that's wise. So that's one area. You know, if you look at his 2-point field percentage, it's gone gradually up over the years. Michael DeVoe, he's always been, a pretty good defender. He's continued that, particularly on the kind of on the backside of the defense, using his length. He's been a little streaky with his shooting, but I think, yeah, I just maybe it's just his overall game. I think, you know, I think the one thing I've heard, you know, Josh Pastor say a bunch is even when he's played poorly or not shot as well, he's typically played, you know, well on defense or passed the ball well. So maybe, you know, I think you see him as, you know, he's can be very good at scoring, particularly, you know, getting in the line. But yeah, maybe development of his overall game. I'm going to guess his assists are up this season from last.
You mentioned earlier that the Yellow Jackets play a lot of zone, so that is definitely a reason for this. But like Syracuse, not a super deep bench coming out for Georgia Tech. Is that typical? Is it a Pastner thing or has that long really been the case for the Jackets?
The way that he coaches. Typically, you know, he'll rely on seven and maybe really more six, you know, maybe eight if he's stretching it, but yeah, he's, you know, that's pretty much the way he likes to do things. I think he finds his group and sticks with it. So there's, and I think probably if I'm going to guess, Jim Boeheim's typically done that over a much longer period of time, but that's pretty common for him in the way he coaches.
There's three games left on the GT schedule right now. Mm-hmm. I'm seeing last four in. They're right on that bubble, which Syracuse is eerily familiar with, maybe not as much this year right now, the way they've been playing recently. Where do you sort of see things going for them? And is this a tournament team in your mind? Do you think they've proven enough so far this season?
It's funny, and you go back to the two games they lost, you know, how much those are counted against them. But it's funny, like, even if they're not counted against them per se as bad losses, there's still two games that you don't have on in the win column. And so obviously if they were, you know, two games better, you know, the record itself would be better, and I'm sure the net would be better too, or certainly be better. Mm-hmm. But you look at how they've played. I mean, they should have wanted Virginia, and obviously this is, you know, the way I look at it is probably different than the way the selections committee, but you know, they played Virginia twice, tough, very tough. They should have beaten Clemson twice. And so from that perspective of they're competitive with, and they beat Florida State for that matter, they're competitive with the best teams in the conference. And so from that regard, yeah, I think, you know, if you put them in the tournament, they probably would hold their own. As far as like whether they have earned their way in is a different question. You know, they've got these three games left. They've probably at least got to win two, maybe three, and then do something in the ACC tournament. But yeah, it's you know, from the resume perspective of what they actually have done on the court in terms of getting wins, they've got a little bit more work to do. Because as you say, most places I see them, they're, you know, in that last four in or next four, or last four out or next four out. So obviously, yeah, this game Saturday with Syracuse and the next couple more are going to be real important.
The Jackets have really defended home court. You look at since those opening two losses, all the losses except for Virginia were on the road. Right. Even there was the close Virginia loss on the road. I'm not exactly sure what your access is. When I was in Atlanta for WAER, I saw a few people in there, but is there still, you think, some sort of home court advantage for Georgia Tech despite the lack of people providing that home court advantage?
It's interesting. Georgia Tech, the school, they've done a really good job of testing within the campus community. And so the positivity rate is like under 1%. And so what the school did was they made a decision, you know, because it's a safe environment, and the kids at school have done a good job of being safe and following protocols. We want to give them some sort of outlet where they can, you know, have, you know, the normal or closer to normal college experience. So they capped attendance at, I think it's 1,200, and 900 of those spots are given to students. And kind of gradually, particularly, you know, since the semester started in January, it's, you know, they've probably had, if I had to, you know, maybe around 600-800 people at a game, maybe a little more than that. And obviously it's not the same thing as a full house, but it can get pretty loud, not like super loud, but enough that, you know, I think if you're an opposing team, you're going to notice. And I think, you know, Mike Bray is interesting. He said this after Notre Dame went there a couple weeks ago and lost, and they you know, had a big 15-point lead at the half and lost by two in the final minute. He made the point that because teams are so used to playing in really sterile environments, like any sort of, you know, atmosphere of any fans getting on you a little bit is maybe going to weigh more than it would normally. And you know, Kevin Keats, the NC State coach, kind of made the similar comment that he's got a young team. And so, you know, if you go to a place that even if it has 500 or 1,000 people, it's still going to have maybe more of an impact than it would. So I think it probably has some effect. You know, you have to look, you know, it's a smaller sample size, so it's hard to tell exactly what it means. I mean, obviously Georgia Tech is gone on the road. They've only won twice. And pretty much all the places I think have not had, I think Florida State had fans, and so it's hard to kind of tease that out, but I'm sure it's had something to do with it. Having you know, a modicum of fans in the arena.
Yeah. When I was there, the band was doing more than their share loud. And also during the fight song for Georgia Tech, people were bouncing up and down.
Uh-huh.
Kind of like gophers. Do you know the story behind that?
Yeah, we were like end of the near the end, like the 8-minute mark in the second half.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was. So this was a women's game, so it was quarters. But it was definitely. Yeah. It was like mid fourth quarter. I
watched. Okay. Yeah. So it's called the Budweiser Bounce. And I think kind of the origin story is, I think there's different ones, but they play the, I don't even know if Budweiser plays a song anymore, but then their commercials, they used to have a jingle. And so they play, and my one version of the story is they used to have a coach, a football coach named, Bud, I think of Bud Foster, this is embarrassing. It's not Bud Walton, he's Arkansas coach. But anyway, the first coach, his first name was Bud. And so the story goes that, you know, they played this song in honor of him because his name was in Budweiser and Bud the coach. I don't know where like the bouncing up and down part came from. I guess it's just kind of a silly college thing, but yeah, so that's where it came from. And so they do that at football games, like between the third and fourth quarter, and at basketball games, these men's games. At the 8-minute timeout. So it's kind of a Georgia Tech tradition. Every school has their own kind of quirky little thing, and that's Georgia Tech's.
I believe it is Bud Carson.
Yes.
Is that it?
Yeah, we're going to have to burn this video, but yeah, Bud Carson, that's right. Yeah.
I had to do the quick wiki search to figure that one out. Syracuse, though, on the other side, has been great at home as well, but has really, really struggled on the road. And one of the big things, I mean, both the men's and women's, they've struggled to get going in these road games. How is Georgia Tech in terms of starting games? Do they usually start fast, or is it a gradual thing? Because every team Syracuse has played on the road seems to be able to start really, really quickly. And that comes most of the time from beyond the arc.
Right. It's kind of varied. I mean, like, for instance, the Notre Dame game that I mentioned, they fell behind, I think, 12-0. But there have been other games where they've come out and put teams away. So it's, you know, it feels like they've done better, you know, in the first half. Like they've been a pretty good team at coming out pretty strong. And I think too, and actually, you know, like Miami, they went there and that, actually that was 12-0. Maybe Georgia Tech, Notre Dame was something different, but they were down 50-35 at the half regardless. I think it's Notre Dame. But so they've got the capacity for it, but it doesn't necessarily always happen. But I think one thing that Georgia Tech does, because their zone is kind of quirky, it's a 1-3-1, which most teams don't do. I think that often can throw teams off, particularly teams that maybe aren't as strong at guard. Obviously, you know, Boeheim has seen everything, done everything. So it's, I think he'll be able to better prepare his team. But that's something certainly to be cognizant of, just of Georgia Tech's quickness, particularly the guards. Maybe teams not being quite ready for that. So that's really something to be that could happen for sure on Saturday.
Just a few more questions left. One of the big ones for me, at least, is when from down in Atlanta right now, what is the perspective of Syracuse right now? Like where do you sort of see them?
Like their season, you're saying, or the
just
team?
Like when you hear Syracuse basketball right now, what is sort of just. When you look at this season, when you hear that you're playing Syracuse, what does that sort of mean in terms of the Georgia Tech mentality? Have they said anything about this game? You see it as is it sort of narrative wise, a simple game or a must win? Like where does Syracuse sort of fit into this in terms of the game?
Like just how is Syracuse perceived?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I could have spoken that a little bit better than I did.
No. I forgot Buck Carson's name, so we're even. It's interesting, you know, I asked Josh Patrick this and kind of remember the context of super positive guys, Brandon Jettick. Like I asked him about, you know, do you have any concerns about a letdown, you know, after winning this, you know, they went to Virginia Tech and got maybe their biggest win this season, sort of a very important win on the road. And he's like, you know, Syracuse is a blue blood and if you can't get ready for Syracuse, then there's something wrong with you. Something words to that effect. And certainly, yeah, over history, you know, certainly Syracuse is one of those named schools. It'd be hard to argue that they haven't been quite as successful in recent years. But I think, yeah, I would think that the name certainly has some cachet, probably not as much as it used to. But it's not, you know, I think if you were asked that the average Georgia Tech fan, you know, where does Syracuse kind of rate on your teams we're afraid of? You know, there should be Duke, which has just had a complete control over Georgia Tech for the last several years. North Carolina, just because they're North Carolina. Florida State's given a lot of trouble. But, you know, Syracuse is probably in the next tier of you know, everyone knows about Jim Boeheim and Derek Coleman and Carmelo Anthony and on and on. So it's, I think it always means something to beat them. Maybe honestly, probably not quite as much as it once did, but certainly they're a name and a team that certainly has, still has cachet, I'd say.
If Syracuse goes down to Georgia Tech and wins, mm-hmm. it's because Georgia Tech did blank. And if Syracuse goes down and they lose, uh-huh. it is because Georgia Tech did blank.
One thing is three-point shooting. Georgia Tech has become more reliant on three-point shooting. And I think I've come to kind of see this more and more. You know, you can have open shots and just miss them just because, you know, it's just, you know, just because you're a 35% shooting team from 3-point doesn't mean you're going to shoot 35%. There's going to be games where you're 40 and 45. And sometimes that means obviously you're going to be at, 30 or 25. So there's that, that which has happened to them in the past. Again, you know, they lost to Florida State at their place, you know, kind of for that reason. I don't know. When I think about where they've struggled, that's you know, or why they've lost, that's probably been a big part of it. You know, sometimes they just haven't defended well, or maybe it's been a bad matchup. That's, you know, if I had to, you know, pick one thing, that probably be it. And as far as if Georgia Tech were to win, a lot of other things, reasons why they lost before, like particularly turnovers, they've generally been pretty good about that. And then too, actually, yeah, I guess it maybe if they're not able to get as many turnovers as they have this season, because that's been another way that they've been able to generate possessions and win. As far as if they were to win, I think, you know, you look at, and we talked this before, Michael DeVoe and Moses Wright and Jose Alvarado all play well. They get some help from, Bubba Parham or Jordan Usher in particular, or Clyde Moore, who's actually another New York guy. He's been actually been starting so the last couple of games. So maybe, you know, he's kind of, depending what they do, he's a more of a defensive player. So maybe he's done a good job on, you know, however they deploy him. They've gotten their turnovers. They shot, you know, a decent rate from three. And got on the free throw line a little bit. So those would be things I'd probably put my finger on, at least from a Georgia Tech perspective.
All right, final question here. We've got our two play-by-play down in Atlanta. It's a mm-hmm. noon game on Saturday. Where should they grab breakfast? Is there a local breakfast spot that's got some clout to it?
Oh, man, I should know better. I mean, we'll go back to the interview. I need to get out more. And I'm not, obviously, I'm clearly not very good at thinking on my feet because I can't remember Georgia Tech football coaches' names. I don't know exactly. Let's see. Are they staying close to campus? Close to Midtown?
I think so.
There's a place near Emory, which isn't too far, and I think it's called maybe it's not. I think it's called Sun in My Belly.
Okay.
And there's another place also called Rise and Dine, and I forget which one's which, but they're both really good. Okay. So those would be two good breakfast places I'd recommend. Obviously, Waffle House kind of maybe goes without saying. It's not a place you guys probably get to go too much, but it's certainly a tried and true tradition here or place that everyone, you know, goes, like, sick. Not everyone, but my wife doesn't, but most people like to go to. So those would be three I'd strongly recommend.
I've got Sun in My Belly on Yelp right now. It looks absolutely delicious. So we'll send them that recommendation. Right. Ken, thank you so much for the time. Ken Segura of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Second time on the podcast. We thank you so much for the return.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
One final thank you to Ken Segura of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He is, as a recurring guest, officially a friend of the program here. So we look forward to getting him back on come football season in the fall. But we've got a very, very important basketball game coming up on Saturday. And, you know, obviously the Duke game, I think, will remain most important game of the season in terms of tournament resume, when they had a chance to really surpass that threshold and get into the field in these later games. But I think every game that comes at the rest of the schedule, given they win one or two, is going to be the most important game of the season. Georgia Tech is recoverable to an extent, but you need this win in order to really be able to start that plea, start that pitch, and say, hey, we're Syracuse basketball. We know we're on the fringe, but we deserve to be in there. You've got to win this game for the most part.
Yeah, in my mind, Syracuse has to win out. Barring a remarkable run in the ACC tournament that I just don't see right now, all three of these games have to be had by SU. And you could argue that the Yellow Jackets are the most winnable one. That being said, I think that around the hill in the 315, there's a little bit of discounting just how good the Yellow Jackets are and just how much of a problem that they might be for Syracuse. You just look at the core three guys, Moses Wright, Jose Alvarado, Michael DeVoe. DeVoe and Alvarado both shoot over 40 from three-point range, and it's not a new thing. It's a pretty consistent thing. They work really well with Wright, who's an athletic big. He's not huge, as Ken just mentioned, but he sets high screens, rolls to the basket hard, very athletic, pretty coordinated, especially compared to some of the guys Syracuse has inside. And Ken said it, Wright had 33 points against SU last year. So this is not the Georgia Tech team that the Orange blew out, and frankly, not the Orange team that blew out the Yellow Jackets last year either. I if I had to bet my whole bank account, I would not put my money on the Orange, because the two shooters stretch the zone, and then Wright has a lot of room to play, and I think he does a lot of damage.
Experience, that's the word you sort of need in your head. When you look at this starting five, when you look at Michael DeVoe, Jose Alvarado, Moses Wright, Jordan Usher, Bubba Parham, 3.8 years of experience on average between the five of them, four seniors and a junior. It is the fourth most experienced team in the country. And I have not done the exact math, but I assume it's got to be as close to the most experienced starting lineup in college basketball. These guys have been there for years, and they have been, you know, constant threats for years. You mentioned the performance out of Moses Wright last year, where he exposed the top of the 2-3 or the right at the top of the foul line there. And that's something that you sort of look to see him try to do again this year. And maybe it'll work, maybe it won't, who knows? But you know, as a Syracuse fan, as a Syracuse media member, as someone within the program, you know exactly what you need to do in order to defend him. It's just, he's good. He knows what he's doing. We talked with Segura. He said that the thing that sort of makes up for the lack of size is his ability to basically be a combo guard in a way. Like, he can put the ball on the floor, he can shoot from the mid-range, he can shoot from the three if need be. He's the guy that can cause nightmares for Syracuse. Really smart player, obviously comes with the experience, but if you can't prevent him from getting the ball in the high post, this is going to be a nightmare game for Syracuse, and it can't be a nightmare game for them. They've got to come out. They've got to play a solid game. We're trying to be mildly optimistic in terms of still saying that there are tournament hopes here. You've got to win this game. You've got to win games, and you probably have to win maybe your next five games to be able to be in this tournament field. So you've got to be able to deny Wright the ball at the top of the key or at the top of the paint, because if not, you saw what he can do. And I know Syracuse won that game last year, but I think that's a very different situation. And if you can't shut him down at the top of the zone, many a teams this year have exposed what happens, and you already know the outcome before this game even starts.
Yeah, it's simple, but it hasn't been simple for Syracuse. You know, after both of us watched Tevin Mack do what Tevin Mack did for Clemson, you know, last season, where he came out of nowhere for 32 points, and then you watch Mark Williams put up a career game, and Justin Champagne, who's a heck of a player and does it to a lot of people too, but he did it pretty easily to Syracuse, had another career game. it's, you know, we're really trying to be optimistic because it's a bad matchup, in my opinion. It is going to be a tough test for Syracuse. I'll be interested to see if Jim continues with the 4-1 kind of modification to the 2-3 that allows SU to press shooters more, or if he's worried so much about right inside that he brings it back to the more traditional 2-3. But that one decision right there could make or break the game. You know, if he presses up and right goes nuts, then GT might have it easy. If he sags back and the shooters go nuts, GT might have it easy. Jim's kind of just got to pick which one he thinks is less likely and then adjust accordingly. This is the first in of three, and I agree with you. I think five wins is probably the threshold. If you lose, then you're 18-8 overall, 10-6 in the regular season, and still, I know, not a great ACC, but the ACC. This one, it's got to be it. There's no other way around it. It's both can't lose and must win for the Orange. There will be no more talk of Syracuse, in my opinion, if the Orange lose this game. So they got to get their bootstraps on and really, really go after it, because this is the whole season. If it's not already lost, this is it right now.
Most likely the last quad one opportunity for Syracuse to get a win when you look at Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech in the net rankings right now is going to safely be a quad one game, win or lose for Syracuse. North Carolina and Clemson, although they could climb to a quad one, if Syracuse wins, likely will not remain quad one games. So Georgia Tech is really the only remaining chance for a quad one win. Obviously, UNC and Clemson could be a quad one loss, which if you're going to lose, you'd rather it be quad one. But GT is probably the only quad one game that you're going to be able to win prior to the ACC tournament. Ben, what is sort of the one thing you circle right now that you need to see Syracuse do in order to win this game tomorrow?
Limit the damage inside. I mean, I think that's what we've been talking about. You know, most teams may not play it this way, but I think it's a better strategy in this game to see if three-point shot, it just doesn't go in as much as the two-point shot. And if a big man's making 60% of his takes, then it's all even there. So I think that SU has to make sure Wright doesn't go nuts and hope to shoot with the two snipers on Georgia Tech and see how that fares.
I got to go similar sort of metric there. You just got to deny the high posts. You've seen what Georgia Tech can do in the high post in terms of the versatility, and not just them. That is the way you approach the 2-3 zone. You've got to do it. You've got to be able to deny there, and that will allow the defense to step up a lot, I think. And that will be the key for this defense to hold its own against Georgia Tech. But that's why you got to play the game. There is a lot to be said here. There is a lot still left on the table. Obviously, they have a lot of work to do to be able to develop their name into the field. Some good news. They did say there would be some replacement teams, I believe. I forget exactly how they worded it, which just seems perfect for Syracuse basketball. So if someone has a COVID complication, there's going to be, I believe, like four sort of replacement teams or whatnot to be able to slide into whatever that spot is. And as a lot of Syracuse fans have already alluded to, would it not be the just stereotypical Syracuse basketball thing to get in because another team has a COVID complication and make a little run at this thing? So who knows, maybe they'll be on the right side of that situation, but they've still got to win some games to even be in that position. Georgia Tech on noon, 11:30 countdown to tip off, but we have quite the day on WAER planned. So please, I mean, join us for as much of it as you want. Obviously, 11:30 countdown, game until 2 o'clock in theory. We've got the double overtime going until 4:30. A live Ostrom Avenue podcast at 88.3 FM, WAER.org, the WAER app. We will be live hosting in Ostrom from 4:30 to 5:30. Please tune into that. That's going to be a lot of fun. We caught up with Jay Alter. We're going to talk a little bit more about this Georgia Tech game after it happens. A lot of really fun stuff. And then obviously at 5:30, countdown to face off for the Syracuse lacrosse game against Virginia. A lot of unbelievable content happening over at WAER. So tune in for as much of that as you can, because it's going to be a real thrill of a day and a lot of people putting in a lot of hard work to make that happen. So 11:30 on Saturday, obviously, and listen to us live at 4:30, because we've got a lot of stuff in store. So for Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. Thank you so much for watching, listening, wherever. Don't forget to like, subscribe, follow us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Leave us a review, leave us a rating. There are so many things that you can do to help us improve this podcast. And we thank you so much for any of those things that you do. Until 4:30 come Saturday, this has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. We'll catch you next time. Stay safe.